With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
All right, you guys, welcome to the second episode of the Temple of Hoop of this season. As usual, it is me, Jay Mapes, aka Coach Maples, here with Kings. Kings, what's going on?
Man, living good, feeling good. You already know how it go.
You know, the Raiders won, so, you know,
it's
the Cowboys had a bye, so, you know, no funk this week. Every now and then, we get a celebrity to hop on the pod.
yourself, man.
This week, this week is that week. We got the legend. You know, the only guy in Minnesota besides Prince and Kirby Puckett, only brother in Minnesota known besides Prince and Kirby Puckett. Miles Brown, what's going on, my guy? What's going on, man?
I don't even want to be here no more. Nah, I'm cool, man. I appreciate y'all having me. I really love it. You guys, you dropping knowledge. I'm just here to help.
Yeah, Miles has always been a supporter of the pod. You know, we were getting it off the ground, giving us little feedback and things that, you know, he would like to hear and we should do. And so we appreciate Miles from jump. Miles, you are kind of a mystery man because you're a little less involved on the timeline than you used to be back in the day. So, like, what is it? What is it that you do, or that would you want to tell us about what you do before we don't want to expose everything? I know you got like a mystery man. So tell us a little bit about what you do before we go into, you know, rundown.
Nah, I started in media, you know, and that's when I was pretty frequent on the timeline with the takes, just being involved, trying to figure out what's going on, see what the conversation is, where I can add shit to it. I fell back, I think about like 4 years ago, I got into advertising. I started working with, you know, making Nike spots, just working on Gatorade now. And yeah, man, you know, I'm just trying to push the culture from a different angle. You know, see what I can do out here.
Right. You see how casually he said that. Nothing. I just do ads for billion-dollar companies. You know, just boring stuff.
Hey,
guys.
Hey, my brother Miles hit me with a DM one time talking about one of his ads he was trying to push. And Mike, I was like, bro. I was like, man.
I'm trying out here, but it's hard. You know.
Nah, we definitely, man. We definitely see the work.
Appreciate you, man.
It's definitely appreciated the things you, the conversations you try to push, even behind the scenes now. More so the convos are really, really deep and interactive, man. So we definitely appreciate that. Wanted to get you on the pod because I feel like your voice kind of needs to be out there a little more, basically for where the game is from a discourse standpoint, which all three of us would say needs to get better.
I'm too, man. Y'all got this. I got it.
You know? All right. So the reason why I invited Miles, right? So the NBA, Miles very rarely just shoots off hoop takes just unprovoked. Like, it has to already be a conversation. He'll tap in. But when the NBA 75 list came out, Miles hops in the group chat that we have and starts going in. And I was like, bro, we got to get this on wax. Because Miles is a historian of the game. He pays attention to stuff like that. And, you know, for all the stuff about lists, like, this was a legacy. I think this was big. Like, it's the 75th anniversary. I think this was kind of big. So I think even guys like us who kind of laugh at lists or whatever, these different type of lists, I think this meant something, right? So we'll go around. We'll start with Miles. You can lead us in. What was your biggest issue personally with the list?
First of all, the way they rolled it out.
You're a media guy, that's right.
It was terrible. Like, something that should have some prestige, you know, and being as important as we're talking about, they rolled it out like a BuzzFeed article. I'm just seeing tweets and congratulations and Instagram. It's like, yo, the NFL would never get down like that. MLB would never get down. Like, they would honor it. players in the history, they would make it an event. Like right. The first time they did the top 50 in Cleveland, what was that, 96?
Yeah.
They brought everybody there. They got all the leather jackets. They had the ceremony. They had the book. It was a thing. It didn't feel like a thing this time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably for the best just because a lot of those names on there have me raising my eyebrows like, bro, what are we doing here? I understand they kept the original top 50, right?
Yeah.
You have to do that because you're running a business. You can't be like, y'all niggas ain't important anymore. You are. You built the league. It's about selling legacy and history and all of that. Cool. Then you they put McAdoo and who was it? Neek. They put them on there. They righted those wrongs from the first time. So that means what? 52. So you got 23 spots left. And there was no rhyme or reason to who they were picking. It was crazy. Where like some dudes were on there and it's just like, okay, you have to be on there just because you're a name. Like Paul Pierce. That one title is doing a lot of work for Paul Pierce. What did he make? How many All-NBA teams did Paul Pierce make? Like three?
If that, I want to say it was low. It was not a lot.
And I think, you know, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. I think that's a good measure of your quality as a player. And if you couldn't make All-NBA throughout your career, how are you one of the 75 best players ever? So I see his name. I get a little weird. Reggie Miller, Ray Allen. It's just like both of those guys, only two times All-NBA. And you both kind of did the same thing. And Klay Thompson actually did that same thing you did. And he played defense and he won championships and he ain't nowhere on
there. Not on there. Yeah.
See, that's a great point.
Anthony Davis, I like you. You're a great talent. That I feel like that's like one of those when they put Shaq on there in like his rookie year. You're projecting like, okay, he's going to be
right, great. Right, right.
But tell me the difference between him and Pau Gasol, where, you know, Pau didn't win a playoff game in Memphis, was a, you know, all-star caliber player, but couldn't get it done by himself. Couldn't lead a team to even a playoff win. Not a series, not a title, just win a fucking playoff game, dog. Like, come on.
And we got to give AD some pushback, though. AD, he did win a playoff series. He was All-NBA. He had multiple All-NBA teams, right. and he was an MVP candidate, you know. So right. he had some individual accolades of dominance that had him projected higher. Right.
I'll slightly push back. I have AD higher than Powell. But the pushback for me was a guy I've never been a fan of. But to keep Dwight Howard off that list, that was the absurd part for me. And I think all three of us are kind of like whatever in terms of Dwight the player, like being fans of him. But he was in a conversation, like it was LeBron, Kobe, and then it was Dwight for like a few years. Like
right. The top five was LeBron, Kobe, Wade, Melo, and Dwight.
Yeah, that's what like, and he was up there. I think it was four straight defensive player of the years, King.
Yeah. So three at least.
Yeah, so it's like how do you keep him off? And it hurts my heart because, you know, me and Kings are Bay Area bred, but there's no way Damian Lillard should be on. I saw Kings tweeted. That's all we can say because of who follows us. He's like, the Bay wins again. And we had to
leave. You know, you already know, man.
Now that we on the pod, I got to be honest. There's no way Dan is on that list, bro. I'm sorry. With the names they left off, I just don't think you can put him on the list.
I'll say this. And this is where, you know, people are annoyed. It came out today on the timeline. They originally wanted Kyrie Irving in the top 75 and they pulled him last minute. So Kyrie Irving was originally supposed to be in Dame's spot and they pulled him last minute.
Are we sure it was for Dame? Are we sure it was for Dame?
It's a speculation. It's for Dame because it was the guard spot. You know what I mean? It was one of those things where they were both guards. They had the little montage and everything except for Kyrie and they pulled it last minute.
So, Miles, explain something to me. So we have a little different thinking here because you were talking about those original 50 had to stay. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Those accountants that Bill Russell made famous, they don't need to be on there.
I
understand what you're saying, but I don't need, like, if I'm looking at, you know, Paul Arizin and, you know, Pau Gasol and those guys, it's not an easy choice for me. And this is a guy who watches who went through a period where he was watching a gang of old basketball on YouTube to try to see like what the game was and the changes. Like, so I'm not just looking at spreadsheets here. Like, I will YouTube and watch old basketball, 60s, 70s, 80s, whatever, just to see the differences and nuances. But trust me, those accounts that Bill Russell was making famous, they don't need to be on there.
That's just you should have seen. You should have seen the timeline's reaction when they put Paul Arizona.
So I see what you were saying though, Miles, with as far as you got to keep that original 50 to just to like they help build the league. I get that point of it. But I'm just saying from a basketball standpoint, the three guys who like ball, like you out there picking a team, you know what I'm saying, you're not gonna Paul Harrison versus some of the guys who were left off. It's like it's not the issue. So the other thing I want to ask you guys about, I'll let you two come answer this. So there was a question about what the criteria was with this list. And that was a big part of the contention as far as who was on there, because a guy like Dennis Rodman made it. And then there were guys like Weber and, you know, Grant Hill and Chris Bosh who did it. And in a vacuum, those guys may have been more talented offensively, at least to the point where they produced, you know, way more stats. But Rodman's impact, you know, I guess was rated higher than what those guys brought to the table by the voting panel, who was a mix of media, old players, and just analysts. So where are you guys with that, with the criteria or lack of explanation of a criteria on this list?
I know they kept the original 50 and then just added guys on. So I don't know what the actual criteria is, especially because they pulled Kyrie out for Dame last minute. So who knows what the actual criteria, if they even had one. But I will say for something when you look at something like Dennis Rodman compared to guys who are more talented, when you look at what basketball is and the impact you have at your position, at what you're asked to do, what you're asked to do. So they're asking Dennis Rodman, to be a lockdown defender to disrupt offensive game plans. And he did it at the highest level. He's arguably the greatest defensive player ever in the history of the sport. That's one side of the sport. One half of the game, he's arguably the greatest ever at. And he had meaningful impact, before he came, the Bulls got worked by Shaq and the Magic. He shows up the next year and they getting whooped. And then you obviously know that impact he had with the Bad Boy Pistons. So it's like he had championship impact in his career wherever he played, basically when he was active in his prime. In terms of when he was on a competitive team and he was asked to be their enforcer, he came in, he plugged in, and he helped good teams be even greater. Better. Yeah, he's a ceiling raiser. He took teams that were already great and he made them even better. Like that in itself is also a very great ability to have, because there's a lot of guys where you put in based on how they have to adjust the plane, they can't make the team better or they're just the team goes sideways. But for Dennis Rodman to raise great teams to even greater heights and to be excellent all world, all time at what he was asked to do, like, I don't know, man. That to me, automatic spot, in my opinion.
That's interesting, because I swear to God, I agree with you like 80%. Where he was, when you put him in a competitive situation, what he did for the Pistons, nobody else could have filled that role. What he did for the Bulls, nobody else could have filled that role. And he won 5 titles. He went back to back with legends, but they were ready-made situations where he could just plug in and do the one thing that he did really well, and he could just blow off all the rest of his responsibilities on and off court. Where, sometimes we remember Dennis was too busy chasing those rebounds to be focusing on the team concept. He would break the chain defensively because I want to box out and get my numbers.
I remember that. I think that was a talking point for me. I remember that, actually. That's a very good point.
Ultimately, though, I think the thing that's tough is you got to look at the whole career. Yep. You talk about Dallas, Los Angeles, San Antonio, where he was a cancer. He will tank your basketball team. Him and Ron Artest are, kind of very similar in that way. You put them in a competitive situation, you give them real expectations and leadership, they're going to produce. But if you need them to lead, you're in trouble.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that is all completely fair. So last thing before we move on from the top 75 issue here. So the Warriors, Clay was extremely upset. He got left off. Draymond didn't care. When they asked him, he didn't care. But Clay was like social media. They had to joke on him in practice to, you know, get his spirits up. But, you know, that bothered Clay because Clay, and he put in, he's, I guess, sacrificing for winning is overlooked. And to me, Clay is the best 3 and D player in NBA history, to me. I know guys have tried to throw, like, can't try to throw Paul George in there. I see Paul George is more than that. But as far as that particular niche, like that role, I don't think anybody is better than Clay. I thought he should have been on the list. So what did you guys think about the two other parts of the Warriors dynasty not being involved with the list?
I mean, I go back and forth with it because, I mean, you know, when I first saw the list, I was hot. I'm like, so-and-so on here. Like, this don't make sense. Because when you start talking about the 75 greatest dudes to ever play basketball, that's the elite of the elite.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these names, you like I said, Ray Allen and Reggie Miller make it, but Klay Thompson doesn't. That's a little strange. What are we prioritizing here? Is this about like moments in Madison Square Garden, or is this about actually like
right?
Because I mean, Reggie's resume is mad thin too. 3-time All NBA. He went to the finals at one time. Kobe and Shaq sent him home, and that's the end. Like, that's one of the 75 greatest. I don't understand if it's about entertainment and legacy, if it's about achievement, or if it's just what a dude can and can't do on the court. Because it seems like a mix of all three.
Right, that's exactly.
Yeah.
So I think what the NBA was trying to do, they like to drive conversation. Because I saw the new motto, which made me kind of throw up, was like, if you aren't on Twitter, are you really watching the game? And I was like, they're really buying into this social media thing, especially Twitter, which is one of the, you know, least used social media on top of that, which is they're letting it drive decisions about the game, which is very wild to me, but whatever. So how do you guys feel about, like, does social media influence this at all, or are they trying to drive conversation?
Kings, you take that before I start talking too much.
Man, well, go ahead and repeat that, Maples. Last
say because NBA, you know, that model they had about NBA Twitter's life. Are really on Twitter? Are you really watching the game? So was a lot of this list driven by conversation?
Oh my god! You see. That's why their marketing. That's why the way they engage the game is terrible. It's terrible. Like, why would you even say that? What? You're running your game through. You're promoting your game through Twitter. This is why the NBA trolls feel emboldened the way they do. The game basically markets it to them. You know, you have incidents that go pop off, and then they make it a talking point to put on the media. Right. Like it's honestly ridiculous, but that's just how it is. And then people wonder why the way the game is covered is so bad. Well, you're letting random trolls dictate your talking points, dictate how you cover the game, dictate how you present the game. Like, man, like, I mean, you have like, look at the Twitter account, StatMuse. They're Twitter comedians now. Like, what? Like, what? You were supposed to be you're supposed to be like reporting numbers, reporting important stats, and now you're trying to crack jokes.
Right. Come on. Not objective man. Anymore. You're just trying to get likes and retweets.
Exactly. It's all about engagement.
It's nasty just because, I mean, like, I understand why they initially did it. It made sense. Like, these are where our fans are. We should be where our fans are at. We should, you know, kind of give a platform to that conversation. And I understand that. But once you started to see it turn nasty, you can't keep leaning in. Like,
right.
I don't know how to get out of this now. Because, yeah, you can put 10 toes down on Twitter. And Twitter, everybody's pissing on your feet.
Right. So. Whoo. All right. Man, we'll leave that there.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Moving on, let's get into some basketball, some current day basketball stuff. Two things I want to get into before we get into some other things. The Ben Simmons saga continued. We're once a week. So over the week, this is what happened. Ben refused to, all offseason refused to come to training camp, finally shows up, puts on a, throws a tantrum, pretty much silent tantrum, pretty much doesn't do anything. Doc asks him to get into a drill. Ben says no. They send him home, find him. He comes back. His back flares up. I'm making air quotes for those who can't see. After the back comes back, meets with Philly, says he's not mentally ready to play for this team to his standards, and he's just out for now. Before I hand this to you guys, I am notoriously pro player. Like, I'm always anti-management labor for sure. Ben has made me think twice a couple times, because I heard all parties at fault in this, by the way. Ben not developing, Philly first enabling him this for a few years. This is before Maury, by the way, so I can't put this in Maury's feet. They enabled him for years, and then kind of threw him under the bus last year when that Ben did play bad, but that was not the only reason they lost. There were a few culprits in that. Starting with you, Miles, we'll go to finish with Kings. Where are your thoughts on this Ben Simmons, the whole situation for now?
I'm with you. I mean, generally, I want to support the player because I understand the situation they put him in. We're going to trade you. Now we're not going to trade you.
Right.
Are you a championship player? I don't know. I don't care about that guy. He's my brother. Like, you're jerking me around. You playing with my livelihood, and I don't like it. Either do something or I don't want to be. I understand how somebody could be in that position. But now you're doing this funny business with the mental health. My back hurts. You trivializing things. And I would be more supportive of you doing that if you would shoot the damn basketball. You know? Like, if you were doing your job and I couldn't point to any faults to you on the court, I'd be like, yeah, man, I got you. I got your back. But you want to half-ass it and have it both ways. And
Right. Go ahead, King.
Yeah, man. They all threw him under the bus. They all made the workplace uncomfortable to work at. But it comes down to that thing where you also have a contractual obligation, right? You want to be paid a certain amount of money. You want to have the millions that you work for. Well, you gotta work. You know what I mean? you gotta go to work. You gotta go to work if you want to get paid. You know what I mean? I mean, you look at somebody like, everybody got on Anthony Davis, and I'm not gonna say he did it. He was the best models, the greatest ever. When he left, there's clearly off the court stuff he did that many Pelicans fans and NOLA folks speak to. But in terms of how he, at least from a, honoring his contract, I mean, he showed up to games. They said he milked some injuries, sure, but then he still, when they were asked him to play, he could play, he tried to play, and he put up numbers so much to the fact that they had to pull him out because they were actively trying to tank.
Winning too much.
So they was too competitive, and they knew they were going to trade him, so they wanted the best draft pick possible. I mean, this did happen. You know what I mean? So that's somebody who was trying to at least honor the contract in a work professional manner. That's what Ben Simmons has to do now. Like, you're an adult. You didn't get your way, but you have to, if you want to get paid, you got to work for it. You know what I mean? In this situation, you just got to work for it. I mean, you don't have to give them your best effort. You know what I mean? They can't control the effort you're going to give on the court, but you got, if you want to get paid, you got to show up, man. It's just, you know, they're not going to pay you for not coming. That's not the contract you signed to play in the NBA. You know what I'm saying? And as far as him using all these things and whatnot, because he doesn't want to play for a team, like you said, it does trivialize some of, you know, some of these topics, you know, some of these things that people actually go through because you don't want to play for this organization. You know what I mean? Like, there's been some crazy, you know, holdout type, you know, guys wanting to get traded. I mean, you remember when T.O. was holding out with the Eagles? He had the media doing push-ups at his you know, garage and all that. But, you know, but those are guys that even with through the drama, the way I see it, it was different with those guys because they were ready to work, though. You know, they were never guys who weren't going to come and say, hey, if I have to go play to earn this money, if I earn the money that I want, I'll play. I just want what I want, the money I want, but I will keep myself in shape. I will be ready to come play. I will be ready to come and work for what I feel I deserve. Ben is coming off as, I don't want to work, but I still want to get paid, and I want to go to wherever I want to go. Like, come on, bro. That's just not how it works.
Yeah, I think people, it was two things with AD. First of all, AD was that type of player where teams are going to give up a haul to get him. Right. That's the first thing. We don't know how much teams are going to give up to get Ben. AD, there was no question about the haul he was going to get. So they're much more willing to work with him on a trade front. Secondly, AD only had 1 year after the deal he had. So there was a lot more leverage on his behalf. Ben has 4 more years on his contract. Right. So I think that's the people are misunderstanding the different types of leverage they have just between quality of player and length of contract. I think that's the other issue here. So moving on, go ahead, Miles.
I agree with you. I think both parties are at fault. Ben got to, you know, you got to be a man, go to work. Philadelphia, you could have handled the whole situation a lot better when you didn't even end up here. But now that we're here, I put it at Adam Silver's feet.
Mm-hmm.
Be a headline in opening week of the season. And we all know David Stern wouldn't have stood for that.
Yeah, man. David was different.
Somebody would have got a phone call and something would have changed. You know, whether it was Ben Simmons or Philadelphia actually making a trade. Adam Silver is just always trying to be the cool dad. You know, cool dad said, I don't have to eat my vegetables. Cool dad, you're going to give me an allowance and I ain't even got to do my chores. I mean, it's like, bro, like eventually you got to draw a line somewhere.
Right.
And this is the opportunity to draw the line and he's not taking it.
Yeah, I think when May, to piggyback off that point, when Moy went on the radio and said, this might be a few years, that's when I was like, okay, Silver's got to step in. Because you got a max player talking about he's not going to play for years while the GM is like, whatever, we're going to get the what we want. He's just not going to play. Like, that is wild.
Like at this point, it's not professional. I mean, it's not professional on Ben's side. Obviously, I talk about that. But also with Maury too, like, bro, you're not going to fleece nobody.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? You're not fleecing nobody, dude. Like, you guys threw him under the bus, suck it up, get the best you can get for him, and move on. Like, this is making a mock. It's literally making a mockery of the process at this point. And it all points to what people are going to say. The next CBA battle is going to be hell.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're looking at what Harden did. They're looking at what Ben is doing. They're looking at what Zion is doing that you know, CAA is trying to keep under wraps. Like, this is not going to you have guys who are just off rookie deals or who are in their rookie deals trying to force their way wherever. I mean, I brought up Zion. What about Porzingis? He basically told the New York, hey, get me out of here. I'm going to take the queue up.
No.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, hey, man, it's not going to be pretty.
We've set a really nasty precedent here. And eventually somebody's going to go too far and it's going to be too late because we're not doing anything in the times like right now where it's a very clear cut situation, bro. Go to work.
Yeah, it's like,
but yeah, like you said, it's on Maury too, because he's good with the numbers. He's good with, you know, putting together complimentary pieces. But as far as like
people
aspect,
okay, yeah,
he's not a people person. And this is a people person situation, you know?
Right. Moving on to another contractual situation, Suns, they got a lot going on, and we'll touch on that.
Oh, man.
But let's go on the court, man. DeAndre Ayton was flat out special in the playoffs last year. The Suns asked him to take a back seat pretty much when they got Chris Paul. He did everything they asked him. Playoffs was absolutely special. So he wants the max, obviously. The Suns are not offering the max. I feel kind of sick because I feel like James Jones is kind of dying on the sword here because Sarver's being cheap and James has kind of had to be a front man, which is the job for the GM. So, you know, that's it. Where are you guys with the DeAndre Ayton situation, man, as far as, you know, what he's asking for and with the Suns being cheap? I'm for me, this is as far as a window for a championship, this is it. The Lakers are just going to be up and down. Obviously, they got to put things together quick. Kawhi is out. Jamal Murray's out. I think that pretty much takes Denver and the Clippers out of the championship situation, barring, you know, any late season returns. As far as a window, I don't know how good it's going to get with Chris Paul being 37 right now, Kings, 37 or 38?
Yeah, 37, 38.
Yeah, I think this is pretty much as far as a championship window goes. I think you just got to pay the man what he wants. And then down the line, right, he's a high commodity. You'll be able to move him if necessary. But I think you got to bite the bullet and pay him. And he might even, the way he's developing, he might end up being worth it. So where are you guys in this? You can start with this one, Kings, then we'll go to Miles.
I don't know if this is it for their window, though. I mean,
okay.
Kawhi coming off injury, LeBron getting old. I mean, how much people trust Anthony Davis? I mean, there's no disrespect to Anthony Davis. He's a talented player, super talented. How many, if you ask Laker fans, do you trust Anthony Davis to lead the Lakers post LeBron? How many of them would be comfortable in saying yes? Like, let's just be honest here. You know what I mean? Then you look at the situation with the Nets. I mean, God knows what Kyrie's doing. People are saying Harden came in out of shape again, and he's going to play himself into shape. But you see how the new rules is affecting him. And also, he's also getting older. I mean, that playing yourself into shape stuff, the older you get past 30, the worse and the harder it is for you to be able to get away with that. And you keep exposing yourself to more injury. He dealt with a major injury last year, when the first few times he's done that in his career. And he came in again, out of shape, older. And if he has another injury that he's going to deal with, I'm not going to be surprised, because he didn't prepare to physically take it. So you look at all these factors of the top teams in the league. They were in a tough fight with Milwaukee. Phoenix themselves is young. They can get better. So I don't think their window is closed. However, I will say they're playing with fire with the DeAndre Ayton situation. I'm only saying this because what do they hope to get from this? You know,
it's
what I mean?
Wild. Yeah, it was wild because, like, if his free agency, he's gonna get a max from somebody.
Exactly. He's gonna get a max deal from a team. You know, like Dallas will give him a max contract. You know what I mean? Like any team Hornets. That needs a big, the Hornets, right? Yeah. The Hornets is the prime target. They need a big. They're for sure throwing the max money. He's like, so if you're gonna have to match that contract anyway, like, what are you doing except causing locker room turmoil for no reason?
Right.
So it's like the logic of their approach. It just doesn't make any sense. You know what I mean? It just doesn't make any sense, because if your goal is to not keep him because you don't want to pay a certain amount of money, well, you might as well trade him right now.
Right. See, that's the
So it's like, what's your plan? That's what you have to ask some of these front offices. What is your plan? And I know James Jones, he wants to keep him. So this is from the owner. And then you have the email, then emails part two, NBA edition, basically. With the owner. So it's like, who knows what that's going to be in the upcoming weeks. So it's like, man, look, and somebody, one of these people on gambling Twitter talked about it. The NBA runs on storylines. It's sad, but that's all we keep getting. Like, it's literally, that's all we keep getting is one storyline after the other. Sarver got this allegations coming up. Morey versus Ben Simmons. You know what I mean? Kyrie Irving. You know what I'm saying? It's just like storyline after storyline after storyline is the main focus of the NBA, it seems, every single day.
Right. Well, Mike, where are you with Ayton, Miles? Go ahead.
No, I think the only thing I can add to that is the reasoning that they're given, you know, at least from what I saw from, like, you know, sources and whatnot. we don't think that you're a max player. Like, how are you undermining a guy you're going to have to match?
That's right.
If that offer just to keep him. Like, you're cutting off your nose to spite your face here, and you're poisoning your locker room while you're trying to use this guy while he still has value for your team and chasing that open window for a championship. So you're not only screwing yourself later, you're doing it right now, too. Like, but that's how that franchise has always been run. You know?
That's the cold part. That's what everybody is saying. You know, they finally got James Jones turning the ship around, and then Sarver at my checkbook. So that speaks to what King's point was, man. It was like a lot of these teams, they're just not in it to win. Like, it's in it to make money. It's like, get rid of the cap and let the teams pay who want to pay, like baseball, man.
if you want to save money and you know what I mean, then go ahead and get whatever punishment the league makes for that in terms of like soccer, where they delegate teams down and whatnot. Like, bro, let's stop lying and acting like there's some type of parity that exists. Right, with the draft and with the salary cap, it doesn't exist, because at the end of the day, even in a controlled environment, guys are going to want to work where they have the most opportunity and the cities that they want to live in. Like, that's just going to happen anyway. So instead of lying to everybody and acting like, you know, this is some type of level playing field, how about a team like the Hawks, for example, drafted well, have a lot of good guys. How about you don't punish them because they want to keep all their guys? How about you give them an opportunity to be able to pay all their guys and retain all their guys, right? Like, don't punish teams that do a good job scouting, do a good job drafting and trying to retain players. Don't make them be punished with some type of salary cap because you want to fake pretend like you're trying to want to see the Pistons compete. You know, you don't. You really don't, bro. Like, you don't want that. So let's cut it out.
Right.
And let's stop all the nonsense, man. That's how I feel.
I saw a great idea. It was like, if a team drafted a player, then they shouldn't count against the luxury tax, or like extremely smaller percentage than signing a free agent over the salary cap. And I thought that was a great idea, to kind of reward what you said, to meet halfway. I know you're anti-cap, period. I was just saying kind of meeting halfway, you know what I'm saying, to reward those teams who do draft well. Right, so they can keep their cores together without worrying about footing a tremendous bill. Let's talk some shop. Well, what we've seen this first week, man. So, first, Chicago Bulls. The competition hasn't been great, but they're doing what's supposed to, absolutely dominating. You know, three underwhelming teams, but they're doing what they're supposed to do. I have not seen basketball come as easy for Zach LaVine his entire career. It looks great. He looks having fun. Lonzo Ball is in a place where he fits and plays more to his style. DeRozan fitting well. They got Caruso off the bench. You guys buying or selling the Bulls early? Just real quick.
I'll buy it. I like Vucevic too.
Yeah. He's been really, you know, he's been surprising defensively. I did not know. Maybe just because Orlando, and I'm just, you know, I don't have a chance to win, so whatever. But he's actually competing on the other end. Maybe kudos to Billy Donovan there. You know, that's his forte.
Yeah, I buy them as a playoff team. I had them in the playoffs,
right?
I don't know. People are talking about, oh, they're prime for a run. I mean, I'm looking at the teams you have to beat to go on a run. You have to beat either Milwaukee, Brooklyn, Atlanta, or Miami to make it to round two. Like, I'm not there. You know, I'm not going to be, they're going to be the team that goes on a run this year. But I'll buy that they're going to be a playoff team.
See, go ahead. I'll go with Spider. Go ahead, Miles.
No, I got nothing.
I agree with you on the first two, Milwaukee and Brooklyn. I think that's just the conference is going to go through eventually. But Atlanta and Miami, let's talk in a month. Because, me and you are extremely high on LaVine as a superstar. We just felt like he just needed the requisite parts around him to show that. So, because in a series with either, maybe not Atlanta because Trey's there, but in a series with Miami, he's absolutely the best offensive player in that series.
Yeah, but look at who he's gonna be guarded by. You go to Miami, you're gonna see Bam, you're gonna see Jimmy, You know what I mean? They're going to have wings for you. And then you go to Atlanta, they got two young monsters in Hunter and Reddish ready to guard you every single night of that series.
Team Levine is ready. Is he ready, though?
Because they got monsters defensively, and they got monsters offensively, too. So, hey, that's what I'm saying, man. It's a whole different thing. We talk about winning a playoff series. Right. I have to see more from the Bulls before I can get on that.
It's just fun to play, to, you know, have fun with their stars. It's been a while since Chicago's been relevant, so it was fun to have that. Same thing. Hornets actually started 3-0 for the first time in their franchise's history, which is kind of wild to think about, given some of the talent they've had through there, between Mourning and Big Mama to, you know, Chris Paul and David West and Baron Davis, like those type of teams. So the first time they've ever started 3-0, LaMelo is showing that he's ready to take that jump. You got Bridges looking like he worked on his game. Buying or selling the Hornets? I think we both had him. I had him as a playing team. You might have had him in there. I can't remember.
Which one?
Hornets. I had him as a playing team. You might have had him in there.
You had them as a playing team. I don't think you had him in the offs, but you had him in the playing team.
I think you had him in the offs, though, right?
No, I didn't have him in the offs.
Oh.
I think I had them just missed from my playing team. If I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
You had them in. I don't think I had them in.
I had the last spot. So where are you with them? Is it you impressed by this 3-0? You got to see more.
Shoot. I mean, they look like they're definitely going to be a playing team. I think I missed the gun on that. I mean, I don't know. I think I had them at 10, honestly, because for me, it was like them and the Wizards and the Raptors, you know, that was kind of, you know, that was battling for those playing spots. I don't really like the Pacers. So I was just them, Wizards, and the Raptors, and I think I took Wizards, and I think I took Hornets. I can't remember off my back, but I think I had Hornets as a playing team. But I do buy them as a playing team. I don't know if as a playoff team.
They need a center, bro. They need a center.
Yeah, because I don't think they have enough to be better than the Knicks or the Bulls, and those are like my last two spots. Or you know, then you have teams like the Celtics, the Sixers,
right?
You know, and the Heat. They're going to be in that, you know, lower tier playoff area. Like, I just don't think they can match up with those teams over the course of the season.
Right. Miles, this is tough for me and you because we both feel that LaMelo should be in San Francisco right now, extending Steph's prime for 7 more years. But you buying with the team from the Hornets thus far?
Yeah. I mean, I agree with y'all. I think they're missing a center. Somebody like a Miles Turner would be perfect for them.
Man.
Help them do what they do. And I think they had the pieces to, you know, go after somebody like that. What happens, happens. But, yeah, I think they're a solid playing team. I think they're exciting. But just like the Bulls, you know, just riding off what King said, I think they can get there. And I think once they get there, we're going to find out what they can't do.
Right. Yep, that's a great point.
You're going to show me what you need to add to your game.
Right. Yeah, that's usually what happens that first run around the playoffs. All right, moving on from two surprise teams to two teams that I think me and Kings both – I picked Milwaukee. King said he's only picking the Nets if Kyrie comes back from sabbatical. So Lakers and Nets both kind of stumbling out the box. Nets are 1-2, actually got handled pretty easily by the Hornets today. I watched that game earlier. Lakers – finally got their first win against upstart Memphis team. Let's start with the Lakers. Kings, that same old, I had to give that Malcolm X speech. We were hoodwinked, bamboozled, run amok. They're talking about meetings they had about Anthony Davis playing center. I'm going to see myself as a center this year. Frank alluded to it, and we get out here, and DeAndre Jordan is starting, and the minutes are bad. Tonight was really bad. They escaped. DeAndre Jordan was minus 16 in a game the Lakers won by 1. So the issue was obviously the lineups with this team. A little bit of injuries, but the lineup usage on this team is going to really be a determining factor in what they are able to do. So What other things you've seen besides that that are kind of slowing the Lakers down, trying to get off the blocks here?
And amen. look. If they're gonna keep doing, even if they're gonna just keep entertaining that two bigs at any point, they just might as well just pencil themselves in for being close games in almost every game at this point. The roster in itself is already sketchy as is. I'm of the mindset that they will trade for a wing at the deadline. I think I've already come to accept that at this point, that is a foregone conclusion, in my opinion. I just don't see how they go into the playoffs with just Trevor Ariza. I mean, as much as I'm high on Ariza, he is just not – it's not good enough, and it's not reliable enough for them to go through a whole round of 16. That's just not going to happen. And as far as, you know, the Lakers and the Nets, I think somebody made a good point. The age, man, I think the age is just showing with those two teams. Those are two old teams. They're relying on older guys to be able to bang inside. You talk about DeAndre, talk about Dwight Howard, talk about Melo. You talk about the Nets, you're relying on Blake, LaMarcus Aldridge, Paul Millsap. I mean, the young guy for the Nets, Claxton, I mean, he's pretty much like a 6'11 wing. He's not real big, you know, honestly. And that was the reason I was telling Paul, I was like, slow down the Claxton stuff, because that he's great. He has a lot of potential, but he don't got frail. The size. He's frail. He don't got the size. And you're seeing it. He really just don't got the size. He's more of a wing than he is a big. So it's like when you have those type of, you know, older or – some frail, more frail legs inside, teams can take advantage of that. You know, they don't fear you attacking. And then you put all the stress on your stars to have to produce night in, night out. With the Lakers, their stars need space. They don't have space. So it makes it harder on them to have to get theirs and then defend. And if you're talking about the Nets, well, you know, they don't have the defense, right, to keep them in games close. So now KD has to outscore guys. You know what I mean? And then Harden has to outscore guys. And then you see he's struggling. He's not in shape. He's struggling to adjust to the rules. 9 free throws in 3 games.
Yeah.
So now it's just compounding issues.
We're going to get to the Nets in a minute. Miles, I know you had some questions about the Westbrook trade. All three of us did, really. But where are you with the Lakers? This first three games, what you've seen?
They're old, and I think the other problem with being old is you setting your ways. Russell Westbrook is who he is. I'm not a go stand in the corner and catch the ball and shoot the three when LeBron gives it to me kind of guy. I'm the guy setting up these plays. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he can make the adjustments that he hasn't made his whole career in a season just to fit in with this team. It's going to be interesting, because I don't know if they can move him, but somebody got to go.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. And I think the point that me and Kings have both made, it was like, we understand Westbrook has a change, but you did trade for a $40 million, you know, cap eating player. So you got to kind of meet him halfway with that. And the best way to do that, for one, is open up the floor for him, which is the first thing, which is, you know, basically remove DeAndre Jordan and Dwight from playing alongside Anthony Davis, right? And because it was weird, like tonight, for example, Westbrook, that first 5 minutes was terrible. You know, every time he's driving, bunch of bodies, turnovers, wild shots. The minute DeAndre got removed from the floor, I think the AD and Westbrook pick and roll was money. They were getting a good look every time they flipped the game around. They were down 10, went up. So I think they just got to meet halfway there. Like I said, I was against the trade from jump because of just Westbrook. Westbrook scares me in the playoffs. It's been about 4 years since he's been actually good in a playoff series. And that's what scared me. But he's a top-notch playmaker. Like the passing in the first half was special. It was like that was good Westbrook. Like if he can do that more so than the crazy pull-up jumpers and the wild drives, trying to throw junk up at the basket. I will take that over the course of a season. And then LeBron just has to be LeBron late. AD has to be AD when it's money time, play the right lineup. And then I think that is the Lakers' ceiling. So, Kings, what are your thoughts on Westbrook before we move to the Nets?
They have, like I said, they have to get another wing.
Yes.
They have to get another wing. Look, I know people don't want to hear this, but as I'm seeing the roster right now, Kendrick Nunn and THT are going to be redundant when it comes down to the actual money time. You know, unless Kendrick Nunn, you know, is going to be more of a spot-up guy off Westbrook or a spot-up guy off LeBron, you know what I mean? And THT can get a shot. They're going to be redundant. A shot-making, off-ball type of wing has to come in. Like, it has to come in. Either THT becomes that or they got to go get that. Because, look, when it comes to the playoffs, the only guys who should be running the offense is LeBron or Russell Westbrook. You already have Malik Monk, who's shown he can get his off the bounce, and he's a vet man, and he can score in the NBA at a decent level. So how much more of those Malik Monk types do you need? You know what I mean? Like, if you have Malik Monk, do you need a Kendrick Nunn, another guy who's not too sure of defensively, who's small? You know what I mean? Who's gonna be more of a off the bounce guy? It's THT. We don't even know if he's a wing or a guard yet, really. You know what I mean? How much more patience do you have for him when you have three guys making $40 million on your roster? You know what I'm saying? Like, you need a wing at this point, and the way Westbrook has to function, he has to be basically a roided up 2020 Rondo. That's really what he has to be. He has to be 2020 Rajon Rondo on roids. Basically, you have to be able to score more than 2020 Rondo did, and you have to be able to facilitate better than 2020 Rondo did. You have to be able to defend better than 2020 Rondo did, and you have to be able to rebound better than 2020 Rondo did. And then everybody else will play off you and LeBron. And that's that. It has to be that. That has to be the formula. I can't see – there's no world to me where – you know, and I like Kendrick Nunn. I like THT. I like them for the regular season. There's no world to me in the playoffs where you're going to go in and your main wing defender is Trevor Ariza. That's it. Yeah. Like, that doesn't exist to me. Where you go in Milwaukee, they have Middleton. They got Rodney Hood. They got Dante DiVincenzo. They got Connaughton. You know what I mean? They got Giannis. You know what I'm saying? Like, you go to Phoenix, they got Cam. They got Mikhail. They got Crowder. You know what I'm saying? You look at the Warriors. They got Wiggins. They got Draymond. They got Iguodala. They got Klay.
What?
You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? And then you got the Clippers, obviously. PG, Kawhi, Marcus, Batum. Like, come on, bro. Like, we're not about to go into the playoffs with one Trevor Ariza and think that's good enough. That's not going to happen, bro. That's not going to happen. People have to get real, bro. Those guards got to go. I'm sorry. They got to go. They got to go.
Yeah, so, obviously, THT is the guy with the most value, I would assume. And probably, honestly, Monk, if he keeps playing how he is, like tonight. Like, Monk has showed a lot of off the bounce stuff, a lot of individual creation that, you know, might be coveted around the trade deadline. So we'll see what happens. On these Nets now, Kings, you mentioned the defense. We all mentioned the age. I'm worried about – I say I'm – it's like KD's having to do a lot early on. And I know that was not the plan for him, but you got Kyrie on sabbatical for his personal reasons. That we won't judge. You got Harden, who was trying to play his way into shape like always, but I think, like, age might be slowing that process down. You know what, Kings, you're a little younger than me and Miles, but that's what Barkley did. You show up at, you know, 280, 290, and then by All-Star break, he'd be in his 250, 260. Like, that's just how Barkley was. That's what Harden's doing. It's the Charles Barkley workout plan.
They need him right now, though.
Huh?
They need him right now.
That's what I'm saying. That's it. They did not plan to have Kyrie on sabbatical.
Right.
And I think that is the issue here. And they just don't have the – it's built for a bunch of guys to play around. Three guys will give you 75 points a game total, right?
Yeah.
That's what the whole thing – so when one of that is gone, you got too many guys playing above their pay grade. And I think that's the issue. Like, they just completely ran out of gas today against the Hornets. Like, KD was like 17 for 24. Harden just is not Harden yet, obviously, so he's not up to snuff. And then they just – they were smart. The Borrego let KD play one-on-one. And then as soon as KD left the game, it got ugly, which is smart. He wasn't gonna let anybody else beat him. So what do the Nets do now? I mean, they gotta have that talk with Kyrie. They gotta just kind of bide their time till Harden is back, while KD, hopefully KD doesn't burn out. So what do the Nets have to do? Well, go ahead, Miles.
I don't know what they can do. I mean, like you said, they're pretty locked in as far as, you know, their talent and identity as basketball team, and that means they locked into their flaws too. We struggled defensively. We were counting on guys to produce for us offensively, like KD, Harden, and Kyrie. Y'all gonna give us 80. Joe Harris is gonna hit three or four threes. The rest of these guys are gonna get some putbacks, and we're gonna be all right. But you saw what was happening with them last year, where they were in a dark. They were fighting for their life every night against like the Wizards, or you know, teams that they should just be blowing out of the box because those flaws are holding them back. And I'm worried about KD, honestly, just because
it's a lot.
We're on our third season in like a year, and you're putting a lot of wear and tear on this dude, asking him just to get you to the playoffs, and then he's got to turn it up another notch and be ready for the playoffs. It's not sustainable to me.
Right. You know what's crazy? Those guys don't have 20 games played together yet. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
Those three don't have 20 games. Those three don't have 20 games played together yet. Go ahead, Kings.
I'm not shocked because, you know, it's the injury situation. Like we told people, when KD had that series against the Bucks where he was playing all those minutes and he looked how he did, it was kind of similar to what Bron used to do all the time, right? But Bron would always be doing that. He was doing that coming off seasons where he played like 75 games, 80 games. KD played how many games? Was it 35 games last season?
Yeah.
So he was fresh for the playoff run. That's not going to be the same case this year.
Oh, we can't do that this year. It's a wrap.
And it might be even worse because he's probably going to have to do more than what was anticipated with the Kyrie situation. And he's definitely going to have to start off doing a lot more because Harden's not in shape yet. So now it's a dangerous situation because both of those two are at risk for an injury. Because KD obviously has the Achilles that he had to come off of. And now his workload is being ramped up in a manner where it wasn't anticipated. And Harden is older and not in shape, and he's trying to play his way into shape, and he has to be relied on because Kyrie's not there. Right. So those two guys now, because of their workload, because of what they're going to have to do that win games, now they're at risk for an injury that they wouldn't have been at risk for if they had the full squad there and everything was moving along and everybody was playing their role. So it's playing – they're playing with fire. The Lakers are playing with fire. Both of those two teams are playing with fire right now.
Right. You know what the wild thing to me was? When they said that Kyrie wasn't playing, I immediately changed my pick to the Bucks, and they were like, they don't need Kyrie to get to the finals. I was like, bro, are you kidding me? Bro, I was like, that what KD did last playoffs was not sustainable whatsoever. Like that.
People have this notion, and I told these people, have this notion, again, that defense doesn't matter, one, and they have this notion that, you know, having interior presence doesn't matter. Bigs don't matter too. And that they really believe KD can do what he did in the playoffs all the time, as if we don't have footage of KD literally gassing himself out in OKC. Remember when he played a full season with OKC in 2016 and he played against the Warriors? What happened? He shot like dog shit. Why?
Well, he gassed out last year. Remember, he was 0 for 6 in overtime in game 7.
He was 0 for 6 in overtime, yeah, just last year. But I'm just going to people before who want to use last year because he had 50 and he had those heroic games. I want you to go back to 2016 when he played a full season and then he went through a playoff run where he had to play both ways. What happened in the Western Conference Finals? He shot terribly because he was fatigued. He had to guard and he had to score because he was a number one option and he had to be one of the, their best perimeter defender for that team outside of Robeson. And he had to be a switch all rim protector. So he was fatigued. That's what happens when you play a long season and you're asked to defend and you're asked to score to help your team win games and to win a chip. It's not easy. So all these people who are saying, oh, they don't need Kyrie, they were operating under a notion that just didn't exist. They didn't exist. They just think that because you average a certain amount of points, you shoot a certain amount of efficiency, it's just plug and chuck. Everything's going to be fine. You know what I mean? You don't have to worry about anything else. But that's not how hoop works. The guys around you matter. Joe Harris, he has never been confident in a playoff series.
Yeah, he's
that matters.
Yeah.
This is multiple playoff series now in big and crucial moments where he's had these type of why are you on the floor moments, right? For a guy who shoots as good as he does in the regular season, he's bringing some of that bad play into this regular season right now. You know what I mean? And it's like, man, a lot of these people who said that, though, they're quickly realizing, at least in these first three games, that is not the case.
Right. I think the adjustment is for the Nets, at least, they just got to live with Cam Thomas's mistakes just because of what he can do offensively. They just got to let him play and just, you know, let him score the ball and take a load off until Harden drops more weight, just to ease the load off. They just got to let him play and play through his rookie mistakes and just tell him, when you get in, you got to be aggressive, be a creator, and we'll live with, you know, you eating possessions just to save these other two guys' legs and get them going to season. So I think that's got to be their counter for the time being.
Absolutely. So I mean, that's why you drafted him, right?
Right.
You didn't draft him to not use that.
Right. Man, so before Miles, going back to your last DM, you got to keep it clean, though. The last thing you sent me. So we mentioned these refs. The adjustment, and I like it. I think once the players adjust, it's going to be lovely. They really shut down the foul baiting this season. Nash and Harden were complaining. Nash was like, well, they made Harden the poster boy and trying to punish him. He shot 9 free throws in 3 games, which is a low for him. I think in the last 7 years, or somebody said, a 3-game low for him, like 7 years now.
Man.
Where are you guys with the rule change? I love them personally. Starting with you, Kings, where are you with the rule
change? I'll add on to that. You want to know a funny fact? The league average for free throws per game is currently 19.7. That's the lowest in NBA history.
I love it.
The lowest in NBA history.
I love it.
Right now is what you're seeing with these free throws. So I think Paul messaged me about, you know, because I talked about the big man is coming back. Paul made a good point to me. He said it might be coming back because they're just not calling shooting fouls anymore. Like, they're just not calling shooting fouls. And there's some people who are actually, now you're getting the people who are like, hey, man, call the foul. Like, some people like John Rivers is upset because it's like, you're not
stats,
calling enough.
No stats.
Stats is getting affected. You're not calling enough of these fouls. A lot of these guys aren't, you know, their points, they think the product is being messed up because there's a lot of guys, you know, who are getting roughed up and they're just not getting a call. This is what everybody complained about. For me personally, somebody who likes physical play, who somebody who likes being able to give defenders the opportunity to defend, you know, for so long, offensive players have gone away and gotten the upper hand. I'm not complaining that defenders finally get some opportunity here. Obviously, the NBA refs are bad, so they always overdo every single thing that gets changed. So when they said they were going to harp down on the shooting fouls, of course they went overboard and just decided to not call anything. But I think the fans are okay with it because they want to see guys battle and get a bucket without having to get free trips for free points. They want to see, can you overcome the adversity on the court without having somebody bail you out because you did some type of manipulation of contact and you were able to now finesse your way to 2 or 3 free throws. So I think from a fan perspective, the fans are okay with it. overall. And as long as that happens, I don't think they're going to change it really until you start seeing ratings drop or something like that.
Go ahead, Miles. I know you were happy about this.
No, I mean, I just want to see honest basketball.
Honest hoop, like I always say.
That's it. I mean, like King said, they overdid it. We're at an all-time low. But just like with, I think, the flop rule, and I'm sure a couple other things that I'm not remembering, those things kind of course correct over the course of a season where they see, okay, we did a little too much. Let's add a couple more they're going to add some more stipulations where it's like, okay, these things are going to be consistently fouls. These things you're never going to get the call for. But overall, I like it just because it's going to force a team to be better about valuing their possessions, about finding better looks, about working with each other, rather than just hunting for a foul every time. Like, that's not enjoyable for me as a fan. That's not enjoyable for the defender as a competitor. It's just a bad product all the way around.
Right.
So I see the scores now, like 100-90. I like
it, of course. Yeah.
You know? Yes, sir.
That means two teams were competing, right. Not this 130-150 mess that we got, you know, for the last few years. So I support it.
That's a great point because you're seeing the scoring outburst, right? When you see scoring outburst now, it's 120-111. You know what I mean? Back like old school where you had, okay, some teams were on fire until they touched 120. It wasn't like last season where that was the average.
147.
That teams like we had the whole top 10 averaging 115 plus. Like, you know what I mean? Like that was literally absurd. But now we're back to it. You're seeing not under 100. You're seeing multiple under 100 scores where most teams are not touching 100 points. You're seeing multiple of those games every night. You're seeing a lot of 100s-90s. You know, every now and then, like you have, like, I think the most highest points scored so far this season out of all the games, I think, was the Blazers. They put 134. Right on the Suns, but they had a crazy shooting night to get there. It wasn't like, you know, it was just easy for them to do that. They had a crazy shooting night. CJ was going off. So it's like you said, it feels more earned now, right? The shot, and it makes sense, right? You're still going to get more points now than before because shot making is better. Teams are taking a lot more threes. There's a lot better spacing. So you're still going to get scoring unlike before, even with the low free throw attempts. So I think the league may have accidentally stumbled onto a winning formula with the fact that, hey, we have spacing, we have better shot makers, we don't have to bail them out,
right?
With these calls.
Amen.
But, I mean, I think the other thing that's interesting is, you know, as players adjust to these rules, who we consider a star might be different. We're talking about a dude like James Harden. You basically just became a top 75 player ever off of free throws. Now you don't get him anymore. If we were calling the game like this the last 5 years, are you still on that list? Are you still an MVP?
Right. Are you averaging 35 or are you averaging 27?
Right.
You know what I mean?
With somebody like Trae Young, I think that he would be able to accept that challenge because, you know, obviously he's already, you know, one of those names that we're passing around. Like, oh, he's always just flopping.
Yeah, what bothered me about Trae was he was beyond. If you watched him in college, he wasn't like that. He was never playing like that. That's what bothered me. He's like, he just saw that the refs were calling it that way. He's like, forget it, I'm going to shoot 10 free throws a night just playing this way.
Right. I mean, if you see Trae this season, he's still scoring and he's still getting his assists up. Like Trae has no problem. He's a competitor. He's, you know, Steve Nash said what he did and Trae said, okay. And he started to play hoop and he started to show people, hey, I can ball. I don't need this to ball. I can just ball. You know what I mean? So Trae's taking it there. Hey man, look, everybody, I know people are going to listen to this and think we're being too, you know, hard on Harden, but when you have him come out and say what he did, and then you have his coach who said that's not basketball just last year, come out and say, well, he's not getting calls this year. It rubs people the wrong way. Like I said, you got to the top 35. You got to the top 35 all time, averaging 35, 36, 33. If you didn't have these type of free throws now, that might be 25-27. Is the legacy the same? I'm not going to speculate on that. He's still a great player. He's still all-time offensive talent. But I understand the logic because – those free throws did a lot of work to get him to those 30s. That's undeniable.
And we are going to leave it there with King's dropping that hot take about Big Jim. He's Big Jim till he loses those 20 pounds. Make sure you guys follow our guest, Miles Brown.
Please don't.
He says, please don't. Please follow him. Follow M. Brown on Twitter. Myself, JJ Mangles 55 underscore MST at It's Kings, bro. We appreciate you guys tapping in with the pod. Like, subscribe, leave a rating. We appreciate the feedback. We got our first mailbag episode coming next week. So make sure you guys, when we post the link, post the tweet to drop questions. Make sure you respond to that. We want to answer those. Yeah, Miles, we appreciate you, brother, for popping on finally, man.
Now, I appreciate y'all having me, man. Like, I just want to be a good guest. I really enjoy you guys. I enjoy that you actually talk about basketball. I'm not trying to tune into Bravo or E! News. You give me what I'm trying to hear. So I hope I added something to it.
All right, appreciate you, brother. You guys, tap in next week. We are out of here.
Yes, sir. Peace, y'all. See y'all next week.
Peace, man. I appreciate y'all.